Welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. This past December, the Tulsa World ran an excellent multi-part series on mental health in our state. In case you didn't see it, among the more interesting items reported are that 1 in 5 Oklahomans suffer from some form of mental illness. The state is number 2 nationally in the prevalence of mental illness, and sadly, 70% of adults needing services are not receiving them. One reason for this is that many of us are ashamed of mental illness and believe that it still carries a stigma. Of course, the other reason so many do not receive services is that they can be hard to come by with a strained mental health system that's already over capacity. Recently, California, the most populous state in the nation, saw a job action by a group of mental health providers at Kaiser Permanente, one of the largest health insurers and providers in the state. About 2,000 Kaiser mental health professionals went on strike, protesting long waits for visits and chronic understaffing. One professional was quoted as feeling highly stressed and stating that the situation there, quote, bumps up against our ethical standards. You may have heard a recent report about this job action in California on Weekend All Things Considered. Host Arun Roth interviewed KQED Radio's health reporter April Domboski, who covered the story. I wanted to explore the issue in more detail, and Domboski was kind enough to oblige. I spoke with her from her office at KQED in San Francisco. April Domboski, welcome to Studio Tulsa on Health.
Thanks for having me.
I wanted to start and ask you just what happened at Kaiser in terms of this job action by mental health professionals.
The problems actually dated back for years, but basically there's a union of mental health clinicians. It's a union of about 2,500 people who have been complaining for years that their patients have to wait unreasonably long times. So psychologists, psychiatrists, social workers who work at Kaiser, they have just rolls and rolls of patients that they're responsible for. And they were complaining that, you know, they would have patients who really, in their clinical judgment, needed to come in once a week, but they didn't have any room in their schedule to see them for 4 weeks or 5 weeks. And so their complaint was that Kaiser simply wasn't hiring enough mental health clinicians to answer the demand of the patients.
So it's a pretty long-standing complaint. How has Kaiser responded to this? And I guess, obviously, maybe they haven't responded quickly enough so that the union folks felt they needed to demonstrate, you know, unity on this.
Well, Kaiser has responded in a couple of different ways. So if we look back to 2013, the state actually stepped in. We have a department here called the Department of Managed Healthcare, which is a regulatory body charged with overseeing HMOs like Kaiser. And they did their own investigation and confirmed what the mental health clinicians were saying and found that patients were having to wait unreasonably long times. And California has its own regulations about what is reasonable. And it varies, but it's roughly about, you know, 14 days. If you call in, your first-time patient, and you call in and you say you want to see someone, the state says you have to see that person within 14 days. And so Kaiser, according to the regulatory body and the union, was failing to meet this standard. And so at first, Kaiser responded by saying, we want to do better. You know, we're going to take a really hard look at our systems and figure a way to fix this. They also had some defenses. You know, they argued with the regulatory body about how they had calculated wait times and exactly what kind of data they analyzed and how they analyzed it. But in that initial round, Kaiser responded and did fix things. And so now what you hear the union saying is, well, okay, Kaiser did fix that. You know, if you're a first-time patient and you call in, you will get an appointment quickly, sometimes even same day if you want. What they're saying now is that Kaiser has shifted around the personnel in the system so that even though they can respond to these initial requests, there's still a big problem with people who need to come in for follow-up appointments. And so they say they've just shifted resources around. They haven't actually addressed the core of the problem, and people are still having to wait really long times for their follow-up appointments. And so it's difficult to get any kind of meaningful treatment done.
So shifting people around, but what did the most recent job action have any impact thus far?
Thus far, it's hard to say. I mean, there's something to keep in mind here, which is that this job action was taken by a union that has been in negotiations with Kaiser for 4 years. So they have these complaints around patient care, but they also have a string of other contractual issues that they are in disagreement about, around salaries and pension benefits and retirement health care benefits. And so the union after 4 years, still has not reached any kind of agreement with Kaiser, and Kaiser has not reached agreement with the union. And so these issues are kind of all intertwined with each other.
Say more about that, because I also noticed that the union representing nurses had a job action separate from this, but also seemed to have recently reached a settlement.
Right. So the Mental Health Clinicians Union, it's actually a relatively new union. They formed about 4 years ago, and so they haven't actually ever had a contract with Kaiser, and so they're still trying to establish themselves. The Nurses Union, the California Nurses Association, has been longstanding for many, many years, and they've had an ongoing relationship with Kaiser, an ongoing contract with Kaiser. Their last three-year contract expired at the end of August. And so that it was around then that they began negotiations for their next contract. And so that particular struggle, which was completely separate from the mental health care workers, lasted about 5 months. And the nurses did go on strike for about 2 days in November. So at the same time that the mental health care workers were on strike in January for a full week, nurses were actively negotiating with Kaiser, and they threatened to go on strike again the following week for 2 days. And so we don't know what's happening behind closed doors in the bargaining room, but I do think it's reasonable to assume that Kaiser was not happy about having to answer questions either to the public or to their members about why these successive strikes were going on. And so there may have been some good motivation there for Kaiser to settle with the nurses. So in some respects, the nurses, you know, benefited from the fact that mental health care workers had gone on strike.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Our guest today is April Domboski, who is a healthcare reporter with KQED Radio in San Francisco. She has covered some job actions at the Kaiser Permanente system out there. That's one of the largest health insurers and providers of healthcare in California. One of the job actions was from mental health workers, which have, it sounds like, only recently formed a union within the last couple of years, and then also their nursing union, which is part of the California Nurses Association, a much longer standing union. Have the mental health workers, is it part of a broader union, or is it a very specific local to Kaiser Permanente or California?
The union is called the National Union of Healthcare Workers. My understanding is that they're only in California, and this kind of goes back much deeper into union politics in California, but this group of mental health care workers had been part of SEIU, which is a much bigger national union.
That's the Service Employees International Union.
Right, and they had a local chapter in Northern California for healthcare workers in Kaiser. So the mental health clinicians had been part of that, and then there was a big falling out between leadership about 4 or 5 years ago and what the ultimate goals of the union should be. And so one of the leaders was ousted and then became president of this new union, the National Union of Healthcare Workers, and has been leading the charge for mental health care workers.
So you have also, well, actually, before I get to that, I want to ask you about your reporting, because you have also not only spoken to some of the mental health professionals who went on strike, but you've talked to patients in the Kaiser system. And what are some of the things you've found?
Well, there's really a mixed reaction. You're certainly going to hear from patients who are unhappy with the wait times. And one of the results of the strike from the mental health care workers is that more people came forward and said, yes, I've had to wait a really long time, or one of my family members has had to wait a really long time. And there have been some very horrific stories in the press of people saying that their loved ones were so ill and so depressed and without treatment, they committed suicide. And so they're saying that that is Kaiser's fault. And it's important to remember that even people who are in regular treatment sometimes do commit suicide. So it is very difficult to draw conclusions that the wait times directly led to a person taking their own life. So there are some patients who are very, very angry about this. And there are patients who are also really, really happy with Kaiser services, especially, you know, if you talk, I talked to several people during the nurses strike, and patients would say, give them whatever they want. I love the nurses. They're great. Kaiser's great. Just give them what they want. So, you know, there's no uniform patient perspective.
So you reported on this Kaiser job action, but as I understand it, there are other challenges to provision of mental health services in California, for example, and I believe the University of California system is also having issues with getting patients in a timely fashion.
That's right. There are many forces involved here. And so on the one hand, you've got a supply and demand question. And one of the big things that's happened in the last year is the implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And so you now have thousands of people who are signing up for health insurance who were not insured before. And so this is certainly something that Kaiser is confronting, thousands of new people who are new to their system, who are, you know, who've been waiting to get care for depression or anxiety. And so the demand for not just healthcare for physical ailments, but for mental health conditions, the demand has gone up. And the question is, how nimbly has Kaiser responded in terms of supply of providers to respond? So this is a very similar thing that is going on in the University of California system. Now, the causes for demand are different because there's not as much of a direct impact of the Affordable Care Act. But what the university system is saying, in California, we had a law passed several years ago. It was a state ballot initiative where voters in California agreed to tax the wealthiest people in California in order to raise money for mental health services. And the University of California system got some of that money, both to provide services, but also to work on some outreach and awareness campaigns. And one of the biggest goals was to reduce stigma. They were finding that a lot of students did have mental health conditions or mental health problems or sometimes just extreme stress from, you know, being in school and the pressures of school, but they weren't coming forward. They weren't actually looking for help. And so one of the big efforts of the last year is to reduce stigma. Now, what some of the university officials are saying is that some of those advocacy campaigns have worked, and more students are coming forward and asking for help. And yet the University of California system is confronting a similar problem where they don't have enough mental health clinicians to meet the demand. And so students are facing really long wait times, sometimes for 5-6 weeks. And this can be really bad for students, partly because, and this is true of many people who are suffering from a mental health condition, but students as well will really, they'll often really wait before they actually ask for help. So by the time they ask for help, they've already been suffering for weeks or maybe months. And then they get to the university system and they're told they have to wait another month or more before they can get an appointment. And so, you know, what starts out as, you know, a minor stressor in the beginning of the semester can turn into a really blown out crisis by finals time, and the student still hasn't gotten any kind of real help.
Wow. So you touched on it with that answer, but about stigma. So do you think that this legislative effort in California will lead to a lessening of stigma for mental illness, perhaps with, you know, the new generation or the millennials, as they're called?
I think it's hard to say. I think the university system believes that there has been some improvement in reducing stigma, but at the same time that they're, you know, grappling with how to meet demand and where are they going to get the money to hire more mental health professionals, there are still huge concerns around stigma. So I certainly don't want to give the impression that California figured it out and solved the problem. Certainly did not. But I do think there's some impression that a little bit of headway has been made.
So you alluded to the difficulty with getting mental health services now that more people in California have insurance as a result of the Affordable Care Act. So California is the most populous state in the union. It's also very early on agreed to start its own state healthcare exchange called Covered California. So one of the things you've chiefly been covering is that is the rollout of the Affordable Care Act, also known as Obamacare. What are some of the pieces that you've worked on in terms of expanding coverage to Californians who previously did not have health insurance?
There are a couple of things that we're looking at that a number of other places in the country are looking at. California did decide to expand Medicaid, and so that has been a huge, huge effort of the state. And California, in fact, opted to expand Medicaid early. So state officials actually began enrolling people 2 years before the actual implementation of the Affordable Care Act. And then when the actual implementation went through, there was a lot more attention and information about what the Affordable Care Act was about, and so a lot more people signed up. And so that's certainly been a concern of our governor. Maybe more people signed up than had been anticipated, and so that's certainly putting pressure on the state budget. There is a lot of federal matching dollars that make the Medicaid expansion possible, but there's a substantial enough charge to the state budget that has some lawmakers concerned about that. We've also, California's also been focused on just enrolling as many people as they can into commercial health plans. And one of the big demographic targets has been the Latino population. California has one of the largest Latino populations in the country. The Latino population also has very little history with health insurance as a product. And so more than 60% of Latinos in California are uninsured or were uninsured before the rollout of the Affordable Care Act. And so the other thing is that Latinos also tend to be younger. And so health insurers are very interested in getting them signed up as a way to balance out their insurance pool. So the more younger, healthier people that you have, the more they help contribute to the cost of providing care for your older, sicker population. And so that's been a big goal of California. They've had mixed results in their success in signing Latinos up, partly because insurance is a foreign concept, and so it's very hard to convince people to buy something and tell them that they need it when they feel like they've been doing fine without it for all of these years. So there was a concerted marketing effort last year, but it was plagued by a number of mistakes, cultural mistakes, targeting mistakes. And so the numbers of Latinos signing up were pretty slow. And in the end, California met its goal, but the lowest end range of its goal. And so this year, California has been really doubling down, as the leader of California's exchange will say, on improving its marketing, improving its outreach. They've set up a number of places where people can go in and get help in person. That's turned out to be a huge issue, not just for Latinos, but for a lot of people who are low income. Don't want to sign up online for health insurance. They want to sit down and talk to somebody that they know and that they trust and really understand the options. Insurance is an incredibly complicated product to buy. There are so many different aspects to it that you need to understand and to figure out how they're going to work best for you and your situation.
What were some of the cultural gaffes that the marketers made in terms of reaching out to the Latino population?
Well, one of the things that's really well understood in terms of marketing to particular demographics is that you have to come up with concepts that are already resonant in that community. And one of the big mistakes that Cover California made was they took ads that had been conceived of and made for a general population, perhaps a middle-income white population, and then they simply translated them into Spanish. And so one of the things that Cover California emphasized greatly was that you cannot be excluded from signing up for insurance because of a pre-existing condition. And that is a huge selling point among health advocates about the Affordable Care Act. That was a huge win. But as we said, we're talking about a population that hasn't owned insurance before. And so if they've never tried to buy insurance before, then they've never been denied for a pre-existing condition. And so let me just clarify, I'm not speaking for all Latinos across the state, but a large proportion of them are coming from that perspective. And so putting an ad in front of a population celebrating how you can't get denied for pre-existing conditions is just going to fall flat among an audience who has never tried to buy it before.
Or for whom the concept of a pre-existing condition doesn't really make any logical sense at all.
Right. Maybe people saw that and don't even know what that is. And so they tune out and then you miss the rest of the message.
Yeah, it's very interesting. I mean, it's a great example of why just translating something literally into another language often, fails to meet the test. In your reporting, it's obviously a huge generalization, but you think of California as a blue state, fairly comfortable Democratic margin in terms of the presidential elections as well as its congressional contingent. Is the Affordable Care Act popular, or I'm sure it varies, but is it popular?
In general, it's very popular. There is wide consensus within the government that the Affordable Care Act is something that California wants to support. It's widely seen as a success in California compared to other states as well. So there's definitely a strong commitment on the part of leaders to uphold the Affordable Care Act. One of the things that has been coming up that advocates have really been pushing for is the Affordable Care Act does not cover undocumented immigrants. And health advocates in California are saying that creates a huge problem because then you've got a large population in the state who's not seeking help for health conditions. That can be a problem for health costs and a burden on emergency rooms. That can be a problem for public health. And so there's a big movement to try to create some kind of state law in California that would allow coverage of undocumented immigrants. So far, there's been a very cool reception to that. One bill that was proposed last year that would have done this failed.
You're listening to Studio Tulsa on Health. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Our guest today is April Domboski, who is a health reporter with KQED Radio in San Francisco. And we're talking about, we started at least talking about, job action for mental health professionals at Kaiser, which is due in part to a large backlog of newly insured patients trying to obtain mental health services at the Kaiser Permanente system in California, which is one of the largest health providers and health insurers in the state of California, which is our nation's most populous state. And I wanted April Domboski to turn back to the issue of unions and healthcare. And we touched a little bit earlier on the nursing union and then the union involving the mental health professionals. And I wonder, do you have any sense that I have read some reports of physicians unionizing, doctors being in unions, because one of the things we've seen with healthcare in the last decade or two is that doctors in general have gone from a majority of them owning their own practices to, in fact, becoming employees of large entities like hospital systems, medical centers, or large group practices. And so there are some movements afoot in some of, I would say, the coastal areas, New York, Massachusetts, and California, for physicians to unionize. Have you come across that in your reporting?
I have not done a lot of reporting on that firsthand, but it does make a lot of sense what you're saying. There has been a huge amount of consolidation in the healthcare market, and so it's true, a lot of sole practitioners or doctors often, you know, small physician groups that were made up of, you know, 5 or 6 physicians or 10 or 12 have been bought by hospital systems, and that's been true in California. So it makes sense to me that there would be concern among doctors about how medicine is being practiced. There was a very small, not exactly an action, rallies rather than a strike among resident doctors. So these are doctors who have finished medical school but are in their residency. There's a very small group of them who joined SEIU at the Children's Hospital in Oakland, and they were complaining, you know, that they weren't getting paid enough, and especially for the high cost of living in the San Francisco Bay Area. And they ended up, after maybe almost 2 years, they finally ended up settling their contract.
So they collectively bargained, as it were, with the hospital entity and were able to obtain a contract they felt was reasonable or more fair?
Right, and they were asking for very small changes, and it was a very small group of doctors, and so I think that's partly why it did take so long, and then ultimately the doctors did end up getting at least enough of what they were asking for that they were able to settle.
So I want to get back to the question of mental health. And I think one of the promises of the Affordable Care Act was this idea that we would eventually achieve mental health parity. And can you explain what's meant by that concept?
It's a complicated concept, but generally the idea is that under the Affordable Care Act, health insurers need to provide equivalent care for mental health conditions as to what they provide for physical conditions. So whatever, and of course both of those things can vary from plan to plan. It depends on what you buy. But it basically says, you know, if you're going to provide, so for example, if you're going to charge a $20 copay for a doctor's visit for physical health condition, then you can't then charge a $40 copay for a mental health care visit. There has to be parity. It has to be equal. So the problem with that is that under the Affordable Care Act, you're still seeing plans being sold that have high copays or very high deductibles. And so just because you have health insurance now doesn't mean you've got great mental health coverage.
Do you think that we'll get there in terms of parity? Is that something that's coming down the pike?
In talking to experts, I think they would say we have got quite a long way to go before we reach that position.
With your journalist hat on, I want to ask you what you see as likely to be the biggest healthcare stories of 2015.
Well, one of the issues that's certainly ongoing is aging. We have an aging population, and there are a lot of questions around how we're going to provide both medical care for that generation, for the baby boomer generation as they get older. There's also a lot of concern around just aging in general and how we're going to help people stay at home longer. There's certainly not enough nursing homes or assisted living facilities to really accommodate the number of people who are aging. Dementia and Alzheimer's is an issue that is certainly associated with the fact that people are living longer. So they're living longer, but they're living now to an age where they're developing these mental health conditions that we don't have a ton of experience with, or they're developing conditions that there aren't enough services for. In California, some of those questions around aging extend into the realm of death. Lawmakers in California just proposed a new law, which is called Aid in Dying. This is a practice where people who are terminally ill, who have a prognosis of 6 months or less to live, could be prescribed lethal medication by their doctor if they ask for it. And so this would be a lethal medication that the patients would take themselves. It would not actually be administered by a doctor. This is hugely controversial. There's only a handful of other states that currently allow this in the country: Oregon, Washington, New Mexico, Vermont. And California has attempted several times to pass a similar law and has failed, but has started the ball rolling again this year, proposing a law that's modeled after the law in Oregon. So I'm definitely going to be keeping an eye on that through the rest of the year.
April Domboski, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks for having me.
April Domboski is a health reporter for KQED Radio in San Francisco. Well, that's our show for today. Studio Tulsa on Health is produced and edited by Scott Gregory. I'm John Schumann, sitting in for Rich Fisher. Thanks for listening.